A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 203. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion of Redshift. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, Redshift, a slightly strange film from the BBC Play for Today series, that famous strand of teleplays that they ran through the 70s and 80s. This one's from 1978. It's 84 minutes long. It's colour. And it's slightly tricky to navigate through because it links three stories in three different times. But there are sort of connections. The characters seem to be connected both by place and by objects and by certain, I suppose, physical ailments that they share. But it's an unusual one to keep track of, Brian.
Yes, that's right. We have all these connections between characters and places and the like. In particular, we have the condition of epilepsy, where we have a central male character who is epileptic in each of the three time frames. And we also have certain objects. There is this polished black axe head that is discovered and rediscovered that falls into the hands of each one of these individuals, and that sort of gives us a link there. And there are also references to looking up at the stars, and in particular looking at Delta Orionis in Orion's belt, that each one of these three people and these three groups of people in radically different times can see the same stars and the same star there.
Yes, it is a complicated one, as you say, Brian, and linked by, are these people linked by the stars? Well, we'll find out a bit more about it.
Yes, we have, as we've mentioned, this sort of shifting in time and place in the television version of this, I think different from the original novel. We have the three stories intercut, so we move from Tom in the present day to Thomas in the 1600s in the English Civil War to Macy in Roman times, and we move from one to the other and see sometimes similar things happening and connections between them.
And I guess we see that all three stories are heading towards, shall we say, difficult and unpleasant conclusions in a way. As you say, Brian, we've got Rome and Britain. We've got this legend of the lost Ninth Legion. An interesting legend, certainly one that's fascinated writers and filmmakers over the years. And you could probably make a list of versions that have been books about the Lost Ninth. And I know in the last sort of 10 or 15 years, there's been films about them. And here they are again, cropping up in this sort of small party of isolated Roman soldiers, cut off from the rest of the army and struggling to survive as they're attacked by local tribes of Britons. So that's Roman Britain. And then again, in the English Civil War, we get this terrible atrocity that happened at St. Bertoline's Church in the village of Barthamley. Again, Alan Garner drawing on this sort of real history and connecting these events over time. And then finally, in the late 1970s, we have our two almost star-crossed lovers, Tom and Jan, separated by distance, and they need something very special to sort of keep them together. And as you say, Brian, you mentioned this star that they're all gazing at, and how Tom, in 1978... looks at this star and remarks that because the light takes so long to reach us, we're looking at the star as it was in Roman times. So there's that sort of connection there backwards in time.
Yes, of course, the connections in these various stories are sort of what makes them interesting in many ways. They set up lots of parallel things as well as the connections that are more direct with the stars and the axe head and so on. And we get in the modern time frame lots of footage of trains and stations and motorways and these various things that push the couple apart and yet also bring them together. And we also get things with the dynamics of them dealing with their parents and different issues there. So you get these sort of domestic issues that are quite different from the more military conflicts that we see in the two historical time frames. But we still get sort of interesting pieces of relationships and of conflict. And in some ways, it's the modern time frame that's sort of bringing things together as they are looking at and talking about the past.
Yeah, it's interesting to, you know, note that this was the late 1970s. It's very easy for us now with instant communication between people. But I mean, we have to remember then in the 1970s, if somebody you loved went off to study nursing in London, that was quite a separation. You know, phone calls were not easy. There'd be letter writing. The train fare to come and visit was probably quite expensive. So it really was a separation for this young couple. And, you know, not only are they kept apart by the distance, it may be even that they're moving further apart as this is happening, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. There are lots of sort of subtle ideas and interesting things going on in here, which is interesting. So thinking a bit more about some of these things with redshift and the ideas there, Alan Garner is known as an author who does sort of quite complex stories and also puts a strong sense of place into his books, which is very much the case here with Mau Cop being so central to it. And he is interested in the sort of mystical links between man and the places and the land around him, which is clearly part of the sensibility we get in this. The novel, which unfortunately I haven't had the chance to read, it's said to be quite a challenging novel, I think with no chapter divisions, and the stories are told one after the other in the novel, so the connections are not quite as drawn together as they are in the television version. And apparently it can be a little challenging knowing which character is speaking and how things are connected to each other.
Okay. We've also got the title. We've got this idea of a red shift. We probably remember our physics just about, that when objects are moving apart and that movement increases the wavelength of electromagnetic radiation, it shifts towards the red end of the spectrum. I think I've got that right, Brian?
Yes, that's right.
So we have this idea of things moving further apart. There's connections, but also things are moving apart. We've got the three times, as you say, but this sort of link, there's the link to the nearby place of Mau Cop, this strange hillside that Alan Garner seems very interested in, and that weird axe head, the significance of which, well, it's not really clearly spelled out for us in this film, but it's certainly there as a link between the three characters.
Yes, that's right. There are lots of connections that are set up, but they are explained in detail as to why this is a connection or how it works, which I think is one of the interesting things about this drama, is that it does leave a lot of these things as open questions and open ideas. Towards the end of the film, Tom says that he needs a redshift, and it's not entirely clear if he's referring to himself and his girlfriend Jan, or if he's thinking about his relationship to history as he's been talking about, or looking at the stars as he's also been talking about. And, you know, the three stories are possibly joining together in one sense, or maybe moving further apart. It's, you know, so much of that is unclear, but very interesting.
Okay, so we have a slightly confusing film, and I'm not sure if we've made it sound more confusing as we've gone along or less. Because I think we have to sort of grapple with the truth at some point, Brian, that this is one of the more complicated stories we've dealt with for quite some time. And it reminded me of another story that we had some difficulties with, another film, Artemis 81, which was which came out 3 years after Redshift. And we covered it all the way back in British Invaders episodes 49 and 50. Another notoriously difficult plot to understand. And there are some common features, I think, Brian.
Yes, that one was about twice as long, which afforded the possibility to have a large number of references to other work, to Hitchcock and so on, which added even more layers to things in some sense. But there's definitely a lot going on in this one. So I think this brings us to our discussion of the good and the bad, what we thought about Redshift. So I'm going to toss that over to you, Eamon. What did you like about Redshift?
Wow, that's a tricky one to start with.
Isn't it, though?
It is. Let's say that this is a very well-known British writer, Alan Garner. He's perhaps better known for The Owl Service and his children's series, The Weird Stone of Brisingamen. But here he is, very famous. We've also got a very well-regarded director, John McKenzie, who had a long and distinguished career. And we've got this hugely important BBC series, Play for Today. So, you know, we've got three big things producing this TV show or this TV play, Redshift. And we have to say, you know, they don't mess about. They're putting some very complex stuff up on the screen for us. So in a way, I think we have to sort of applaud it for trying something quite hard and trying it with a very impressive crew.
Yes, it is a very ambitious production. And they did a lot of layering of these different ideas and the things that were sort of abstract in the book, as I understand. They kept them as very abstract things. They didn't sort of do the cop-out and put in an explanation or make things much more obvious. And while in some ways I struggled with the complexity of this, I quite like the fact that it was so complex and had so many layers and sort of subtle references to it.
Okay, so it's challenging. As you say, it's complex, several layers. You're quite right. They don't explain it. There is no easy answer at the end of this film to explain what's been going on or the links between the three stories. We're left to do a lot of the work on that ourselves. It looks very good. We've got a nice transfer by the BFI, and as you say, it's all filmed on locations and they all look very impressive. What about the cast and the acting, Brian? Any sort of standouts there for you?
Well, I really like James Hazeldine as an actor, so it was really nice seeing him there, and I thought he did quite a good job with it as well. And the sort of central characters, or in some cases almost nominally central characters, of Tom and Thomas and Macy, they were all very good, and they had some challenging things to do and to get across as actors there. So I thought that was quite nice to see what they did with them.
Okay. I mean, there aren't any bad sort of performances in there. As you say, James Hazeldine stands out. It's quite interesting when he appears how he can sort of easily dominate proceedings because he's just such a watchable actor.
Yes. It was also interesting to see Robert Brown in there. He played M in the James Bond films for a number of films in the 1980s. So it was quite neat to see him there, and certainly to see pretty solid performances across the board in this.
Okay. You might also notice Michael Elphick, another well-known British actor in a small role. He's also in that English Civil War story, which features the other two actors we've been concentrating on. The part of Tom in the modern era, It's a tricky one. I don't know if it's the actor or the fact that he's given such a complicated role, because young Tom is not a straightforward character. He's a troubled young man, not terribly likable, perhaps, Brian.
That's right. I sort of enjoyed his performance, but that character bears most of the responsibility for bringing out the connections and the ideas, in as much as they are explained and sort of focus brought to them, almost all of that is through him. And I thought he did a pretty good job with that.
Okay, certainly a challenging role for him. As you say, he has to carry a lot of it and deliver to us some of the understanding of what links these stories and what's actually it's all about. Now, it's been released by the BFI as part of their science fiction season that they've been running, and it's got this sort of physics-related title, and it starts with a view of the stars that all the characters are sort of linked by. But it does sort of beg me to ask the question, Brian, is it science fiction?
That's an interesting one. And I've never been too big on, you know, slotting things into individual genre boxes and saying, you know, fantasy is over here, science fiction is over here, etc., etc. I find it's much more close and intermingled than that. But because this is so abstract and has these surreal kind of elements to it, I find it's very hard to put it into a category, in that we don't have anything saying that this is a sort of fantastical thing that is linking these characters and driving it in a certain way. And we don't have a particularly science fiction connection either, because these things are not explained. It's left up to us to interpret it. So I don't see that we can really give a good answer as to where it belongs in terms of genre.
Okay. I mean, it's a very interesting one. Yes, it puzzles me as to whether it's science fiction or fantasy or just three separate stories. It's perhaps interesting if I just read a little bit of the copy from the BFI DVD box, where it says, adapted by Alan Garner from his own complex and enthralling sci-fi fantasy novel. So I know we're not trying not to categorize things, but there's the BFI, I think, staking a claim that it is some form of science fiction.
That's fair enough, because you have these sort of abstract ideas that do fit nicely in a science fiction context, where I think they can fit probably equally well as a more sort of fantasy or supernatural sort of thing. Where in Artemis 81, which you mentioned, it also did strange and abstract things, but they had sort of explicit science fiction references in it and explicit fantasy references in it, where you had angels that were also aliens, and it sort of really tied it to both genres quite firmly. In this case, we don't really have the ties in either direction.
Okay. I'm gonna throw another quote from the back of the DVD case at you, Brian, to pose another question. It also says, Redshift is a uniquely compelling play for today from the golden age of BBC drama. Now, I think we can agree that Play for Today was a golden age of BBC drama, and that Redshift is certainly unique. But is it compelling, Brian?
Oh, interesting question. It had elements that were compelling, I suppose. It was definitely an interesting one and a complex one. Compelling is not something that would jump to mind for me, so maybe not. But it was definitely interesting and worth watching. What do you think about that?
Well, it is, as you say, it's an interesting question. Does this compel us? I have to say that I found this quite a tough watch. Listeners who heard my trail at the end of our previous episodes when we were talking about Paradox will probably remember that I said I'd watched this as a teenager and been quite impressed by it. So I'm a bit puzzled by my 17-year-old self finding this interesting, because watching it now, I found it quite tricky. It felt much longer than 84 minutes. I thought it was quite dated. I thought young Tom was just annoying, a bit of a drip, prone to making sort of pretentious statements, and quite why his girlfriend wants to stick with him, I don't know. But there you go. So for me, no, it's not compelling. It's quite a tricky watch, and I'm a bit bothered by my 17-year-old pretentious self finding it so interesting.
Yeah, I didn't have those particular problems with it, but it is certainly a challenging watch, and it's definitely not for everyone.
Okay.
What did you think about how epilepsy was portrayed in this?
That's a good question. I mean, certainly the actors do a fair job of impersonating somebody with epilepsy or showing us a seizure. I suppose I'm a bit perplexed as to why they've used that as a linking theme between the three characters. It just seems a bit odd, really. The whole thing seems a bit strange. Why are these three characters linked? How are they linked? What's the axe head all about? I still didn't manage to figure that out. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting portrayal of characters with epilepsy, and we certainly see that Tom in the modern era, his condition is much more controlled, obviously. But, yeah, the berserker rage of the Roman soldier and the fit on top of the church during the siege. Well, I suppose they're interesting elements of his whole sort of mishmash that is Redshift. So I guess now we have to put the question as whether we should challenge our listeners to watch Redshift. And we get into our bit where we're going to make our recommendations and... You may be already getting a sense of where I'm going with mine, but Brian, you had a sort of more interesting sort of reaction to this show.
Okay, yeah, I'll start this with a cautious recommendation. I think it's quite a good show. It is an extremely challenging production, and it is a challenging thing to watch, which is definitely not for everyone. If you're looking for something that doesn't demand your full attention, or something that is fairly simple or explains everything, then this is not for you. It's not what you're looking for. But if you enjoy something that is challenging and has some complex ideas that you can come back to on a repeated viewing and see more in it than you saw the first time round, then yeah, this I think would be worth a watch. It's an interesting one. I think in some ways for re-watching and the sort of intense complexity type things, Artemis 81 is a stronger show and is maybe even harder to approach, but has a lot in it. This doesn't quite have all of those things in it. It's a shorter production and what have you. But it is quite an interesting show. So I would say if you like these challenging, layered, interesting productions, then absolutely get a hold of this and take a look and let us know what you think.
Okay, it's certainly off the beaten track for us here at British Invaders. I will start by saying that we have to applaud, I'm sure we all do, the BFI for putting out these recent series of DVDs, and we have to applaud them for including lots of extras and a nice booklet and all that. But when it comes to Redshift, I'm afraid I found it dull, 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 and I can't really recommend that our listeners spend their money on it. Unless, of course, they are, like me, a pretentious 17-year-old who's trying to find something very sort of serious and worthy to look at, which I'm sure none of our listeners are. So I would say avoid Redshift and look elsewhere in the BFI's recent slew of releases. And while I'm at it, I would put out a request to BFI for another famous play for today with a science fiction or horror theme, an Alan Clarke play from the 70s called Pender's Fen, which starred Spencer Banks, who we remember from Time Slip, a very well-renowned and reviewed play for today, but currently not available on release. So that's perhaps one for the BFI. That's one I would like to see, but I certainly won't be watching Redshift again, I'm afraid, Brian.
Okay, very good. So, in summary, Redshift was a complex drama that was spread across three different time periods, each focusing on a central male character who was suffering with epilepsy. We are first introduced to Tom in the present-day 1970s, and then to Thomas in the 1600s in the English Civil War, and then to Macy in Roman times. And each one of them has this one axe head, sort of very old, polished black axe head that falls into the hands of one, then the other, and then the other. And each one of them is looking at the star, Delta Orionis, in Orion's belt. And these things provide a connection between them, as does the epilepsy that each one suffers from. And we get some interesting and complex ideas with each of them being involved in a conflict, either an open military conflict or more of a siege, or in modern times, a more relationship, domestic type of conflict. And we see the commonalities between the different events and the different time frames and these different characters in this very abstract type of way, with lots of layered and complex types of things that are seen throughout.
There you go. Very good, Brian. Another good summary. That's up there with your summary of Artemis 81, I think.
Yes.
And as ever, if you agree or disagree with our takes on Redshift, if you feel that my 17-year-old self was correct, that this is a good show, then please do get in touch and let us know. We'd love to hear from people who saw it at the time or people who've watched it more recently. Give us your reviews. Join us on the Facebook page.
And if you read the book, tell us if you think we should be reading it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We'd love to hear from somebody who's read the book and can perhaps explain it to us, or certainly to me. And, of course, come back next time when we're coming bang up to date with another BBC series, another series that got cancelled after one series. It's The Fades from 2011, a BBC Three show. And it's an interesting show because it won a BAFTA, Brian, for Best Drama. So that will be something interesting to talk about next time, because it BAFTA'd and then got cancelled.
Yes, that's right. Interesting show, for sure.
And, of course, please get in touch with us. Use electromagnetic radiation in all its forms. Avoid a redshift and let us know what you think about either this or The Fades.
Yes, and feel free to look at a star of your choice if you like. You can reach us at BritishInvaders.com, and you can find us at TheGeekCultureNetwork.com, where we are there with a number of other podcasts. We have a Facebook group, so search for British Invaders on Facebook and you will find our community, where we share various things with our listeners and they share lots of links and things with us as well. And we have lots of good discussions about the things that we're covering, and also about Doctor Who and about other British shows and various things. So it's a nice little community for us.
Yes, very good. At the moment, we're looking on the Facebook group at the most recent new Thunderbirds trailer, and Gordon is chipping in and reviewing The Fades for us. So, yes, come and join us at Facebook, or search for us at the second star to the right, straight on till morning, and then you'll find us at VogNetwork.com, which is the home of Voice of Geeks. That's a streaming radio channel with all sorts of geeky goodness. Lots of different podcast shows going out on the Voice of Geeks network. That's VogNetwork.com. And if you're listening to us there, as always, welcome to all Vog networks and to all Vogons.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for sticking with us and getting through Redshift. And this is Eamon in England saying that the Redshift turned me rather blue.